You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Nine sixteen on the left coast of the United States. Mike McNamara with you. Headed for 88 degrees here in Southern California. Santa Ana's blowing. That's right. Joining me from the great state of Texas, Michael Musselman.
I can't believe you're playing that background music of those losers from England that can't get their...
They're from Ireland.
Or Ireland. Ireland.
Let's get it right.
Great Britain.
Ireland, hey, the Republic of Ireland is not Great Britain, okay? These guys are from the Republic. They're not from Ulster. So get it right, all right?
I don't know why you're defending them. You're Scottish.
I don't even like the Irish. Hi, boyo. What's going on with you? Why don't you like the Irish? Yeah, guys like Duffy White, Mac, hey, we're going down to the Irish Brigade. I'm like, I'm American. I don't go there. What? Yeah, I don't celebrate that. Je suis American.
I was there.
Heretic. You're a heretic, Mac. Shut up. Okay. I'm not going to the Blarney Stone and singing whiny Irish songs, okay? I don't like it.
But the guy, you know, here's one. If you are born with a Christian name and you decide to change it, that's great. But don't sit there and tell me that you only have one word, you know, one syllable name, and that's it. You have no middle name or last name. You just... a single entity known as Bono.
Bono.
Fred.
You might be losing your mind, okay?
You are out for lunch, dude. You know what? I'm going to put you in a capsule and shoot you into space where you belong.
Where you belong. You and those goofy glasses. Hey, are you, you've been coughing for like 3 weeks. Are you part of the flu thing that is like crushing the nation? No?
No, I'm not in that category. Please. See, and there you go. Now you're getting me more upset because you're putting me in categories.
No, I'm just asking you. I didn't put you in categories.
No, you made an assumption.
No, I didn't. I asked you a fucking question. Hey, are you? That's a question.
No. I think that's an assumption. You're moving.
No, if I should have said, hey, you are, but I didn't. I said, hey, are you? Okay?
Okay. That's
how you can tell it's a question unless you're fucking stupid.
Well, now what are you implying?
That you're fucking stupid if you can't tell the difference between a question and a statement. Oh.
See, this is not how we start Monday morning out.
I just asked a question, and you started accusing me.
You are really, really, really kind of just, I don't know, what's wrong with you today, man?
Nothing. I'm happy.
Okay, you're yelling, and I'm calm.
Okay, I'll stop yelling then. I'm happy.
See? Yeah, now you're happy. I come off accusatory right off the bat. And
no,
then I'm defending my innocent self.
I asked you a question. If you and this cough is part of the influenza thing that is claiming lives across the country, and yours has morphed into pneumonia or something, right?
No, mine's fine. I just have like it's just like a upper respiratory thing. But it came from pneumonia, yeah. Or it came from the flu. But I'm done with all that stuff.
Did you get a flu shot?
Yeah, I got a Tamiflu.
Flu shot. Can I tell you about flu shots and how bullshit they are?
Who?
Flu shots.
Well, first of all, I don't know if they're bullshit, Mac.
They are. Yeah. They are.
Well, there's an argument. You can find a doctor for a platform on both sides.
Okay, I'm looking for the truth, man. So why am I going to talk to a doctor?
Well, come on. You know what? Let's save the chase or the hunt. First of all, you're never going to find the truth. by looking into pharmaceuticals or medicine. Second, you're never going to find the truth about politics by looking into politicians. You know, you're never going to, those are kind of the capstones of you're never going to find the truth by looking in, by researching pharmaceutical companies or hospitals or doctors or, you know, truth's not there. They buried the truth. Truth about flu shock, the truth about all that stuff. You'll never find it. And yes, if you do,
I know it.
You're going to have people stand at your door and you're going to be like, who are you? And then they're going to shoot you. Like a movie.
Here's how they do flu shots. They do an estimate of what flu they think is going to be prevalent in the United States, and they make vaccine. They make vaccine for that strain of flu because there's a whole variety of strains of flu. You know, and the chance that your flu is going to be remedied by that shot, pretty small. But you can go make yourself feel good and get your flu shot.
Well, the problem with
thank you
making these vaccines is they're playing with science that they don't understand because the, you know, the virus keeps morphing and it changing.
Right.
It wants to survive.
Right.
So it keeps changing and it's learning. So.
Thank you.
You know, it knows what strain or what you, things off of this that you use for the, I mean, so it's actually kind of metamorphosing into something that one day we may never be able to fight. Or find something for it, and it's going to wipe out the human population.
Ooh.
And that's the day I wait for, too.
Because based on what I read...
Let's say that day comes.
Based on what I read on social media, that day can't get here quick enough.
Oh, I hope... I mean, I'm just like, God, please.
Just wipe us out. Put us out of our misery.
I told Tina before, I said, you know what? If nukes fly, then you said nukes fly, and I don't know why they hit Granbury, but it means let's say one came, and we got word that a nuke was, you know, coming in here. And I said, we're gonna go grab the lawn chairs, grab your favorite drink. We're gonna go sit up on the 13th fairway and just sit there next to each other and hold hands and just kind of drink and talk and just wait.
And that's how we're gonna find you, carbon burn into the 13th fairway. Look at this beautiful couple.
Yeah,
kind of like something like out of Pompeii. Oh, look, they were holding hands. Right.
Because I'm not going to run from it. I'm waiting for it. I want the human extinction to happen in my lifetime. Because humans are evil. We're the worst thing that ever happened to this planet.
I don't know about that, but social media certainly is.
Who invented social media?
We did.
Thank you.
Humans.
Who invented the Democratic Party? Thank you.
Humans did.
Yeah.
All right. Point well made.
So, time for humans to go. Who's going to make it? Who's going to make it worse? Humans.
Humans.
Who's going to make it better? Nobody. To save this beautiful planet, the parasite, the leech, the tick, whatever you want to call it, needs to be removed.
Whoa. I don't know about that.
We're not this planet. I mean, it's a living organism, but we're treated like we are like a tick on a dog's back, just in bed and suck blood, baby.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't have any.
Then what do you do to a tick on a dog's back?
Pull it off.
And stomp it into the earth.
Ticks, man. They're just disgusting.
Yeah, I hate ticks. So now we're ticks. So now I hate myself.
I'm not a tick. You might be a tick. I'm not a tick.
Oh, I'm not a tick. I'm an anti-tick.
You're anti-tick?
I'm like, I hate other ticks. Other humans, I should say.
What? How was your weekend?
Shitty.
Oh, man. What did you do over the weekend? Was the weather nice? Did you do anything fun?
The weather was
shitty.
The weather was beautiful.
It was? What's the weather like? Typical, this nice part of the year in Texas, isn't it? Like 70s, right?
Yeah.
60, 70, beautiful.
60s. Yeah, lows in the high 40s to low 50s.
Okay, hold on.
In the 60s.
Two emails for you. Hey, Mac, has the gunner ever seen a World War II era flame weapon fired? We were talking to Ken Rogers, who did the thing, the Quezon documentary, and they had, I didn't realize it until I watched it, that they had flamethrowers. It's the only time I ever saw that day.
To answer the question, is the answer. We actually flew up to 29 Palms when I was with 3-5. With First LAR. I was actually with Duffy White. And it was prior to going into the assault in 2003. We were looking at prototype. It was up at 29 Palms, way up like towards Sunshine Peak. They had literally made these caves into the side of those Rocky Mountains. It bore these caves out, or some of them were probably there, the petroglyphs, right? And they did demonstrations of they showed a World War II, the three tank flame thrower. They did some modern ones where they had some more like modern day, but they didn't last as long. I think they were like a one shot type deal. You know, it just shoots this flame out for maybe 5-10 seconds, and then they were looking at different experiments of different flamethrower type prototypes, and we probably looked at about maybe 6 dozen, and then we flew back.
Did you see the World War
Nothing
II?
Really.
Did you see the World War II? Did they shoot them?
Yeah, the very first one was the World War II one.
What did that look like?
Oh, it looks scary as shit, because you're dripping fire all the time out of the nozzle. You got a constant burners or a constant little Bunsen burner going on in the front of your gun, and then that compressed air shoots that flame mixture, and the way it swirls right there at the nozzle, and you know that sound it makes. But it's pretty impressive, but it's scary in the fact that, man, fire, there's two things that I don't like fucking with at all, and that's electricity and fire. I like them. They're cool to watch. I mean, there's nothing cooler than watching like a transformer blow on a power line, or watching the beautiful fire, you know, into a fire pit. But as long as it's controlled and I'm not near it, I don't like being in fire, and I don't like being near electricity. So it's cool. I just don't want to be near it. I don't want to have it on my back.
Wow. I don't know too many of the guys I know that have seen it.
Oh, yeah. We all saw it that day.
Wow.
It makes a weird, I mean, it's a crazy sound, too. I mean, it's kind of hard to
describe the sound.
I mean, it's
a whoosh?
I don't know. If you could put a mic, like a WD-10 40, you know, you take WD-40 and you light it at the end, we've all done.
Right.
But a little bit more, it sounds like that, but more of a lower pitch. More throaty, you know, but it's scary. I mean, I could see the psychological advantage over that weapon, man. It's a scary-ass thing. And that's just sticks and burns. Burns everywhere. Sticks to everything.
Approximately how many weapons did you see that day?
About 6. They're all flamethrower types. Prototypes.
Got it.
Except for the first one was the actual flamethrower. And then we had these more modern type flamethrower. I think one of them didn't even actually work. But they were all real quick. I don't know how they, you know, you look at, this thing was developed in the 40s and the 1930s, and they got it right. And now it's, you know, the 2000s, and they can't make compressed flame come out of a tank. You know, I don't get it. Why not just put a big-ass aerosol can on this kid's back right at the end of this plastic straw?
We can't figure it out. We can fly,
yeah,
like, We could make a 30,000-pound, right, precision-guided piece of ordnance that will fly right through somebody's windshield, but we can't make a flame weapon. Hmm.
Yeah, crazy.
Interesting.
But we used to have the M202.
Yeah, that quad flame shot thing, right?
The four shots. Yeah, the four-shot rocket, flame rockets.
Yeah, but that
which were scarier than hell.
I never saw that thing get fired. It used to leak all over the place. It was not.
Yeah, leak. I know they leaked the napalm, because that was napalm in those rockets.
Right.
And that shit's, you know, we found out later on that napalm is not a good thing unless you're dropping it on, you know, a bunch of gooks in the jungles of Vietnam.
What did you ever deal with it?
Napalm?
Yeah.
Yeah. You saw napalm. They were still dropping napalm from A6s when I came in the Marine Corps.
Yeah, but did you?
Dropping napalm in Tornham or in the Chocolate Mountain.
Yeah. No, but I saw it at a distance. Did you ever deal with it up close?
No, I mean, but I actually got to smell it like the movie. Napalm. Nothing else in the world smells like it. They dropped it pretty close. Like right in, but it does. It's
Victory.
I've always liked that gasoline smell. Like when you get gasoline on your fingers and you're a kid, you're like,
right.
I love that smell. So that's the whole air smells like, and it's a pretty cool smell. We're like, oh yeah, I could get used to this.
I'll tell you what, when you see it, what was the other one? Faye? I never saw that. They always used to drop that in a corridor that nobody could see. Nobody could be there. Why?
I've seen Faye from a distance, but yeah, you can't be up close with Faye.
Explain to everybody what Faye is.
Faye is it's actually a pretty cool thing. It's so like the daisy cutter is a Faye bomb. It's a fuel air explosion, and usually it's like a big round ball, it doesn't look like a bomb, it just looks like a fuel tank. Kick it out of the back of the plane or drop from the plane, it falls retarded, so it means, not retarded like that, but it's got something slowing it down, like a drogue or a chute. And when it comes near something, there's an outer burst, what dispenses the fumes, the aerosol, because gas doesn't burn, the liquid doesn't burn, it's the fumes that burn, right? When the liquid fuel around it starts to evaporate, it creates an immense amount of vapor all around this area. And then once that happens, a split second later, the precursor charge kicks in and ignites it. So you got this huge, you know, atmospheric fireball that just ignites from the center on out. From, you know, like again, don't practice this at home, but just believe me, this will work. If you were taking an aerosol can and open it up immediately and at the same time ignite that, you know, around you, those hydrofluorocarbons, they're going to ignite into the atmosphere. So a little aerosol can consume the size of a garage, you know, the whole garage would just be ignited with flame. Wow. Blow out your windows and shit like that. But don't do that. Just trust me, that's what a fuel air explosion is.
Yeah, no, it's like, oh, what are you doing? This, you know, you're in the defense or something, and everything's got to stop because they're doing the phase shot in whatever corridor that they were doing it. That was a flame.
Well, dude, because if you look at, napalm when it goes out, it consumes a lot of oxygen immediately. A Faye bomb, dude, when you look at, when you get a chance after this, look at a Faye bomb, on slow-mo, you know, there's videos out of it, you know, when they're dropping it into remote areas. Look at the atmospherics around it, how much oxygen it consumes immediately from the surrounding area. I mean, it is ridiculous.
How am I going to tell that?
Okay, if you look at one that's way out, well, you're going to see the precursor go off, and then you're going to see this, it's going to be a white glow immediately in the middle, and that's going to transfer out basically at hypersonic speeds. I mean, that's going to be the speed of sound. And then the flame is going to come behind that. What you're going to see is you're going to see it when you look at the explosion. Look real carefully. You're going to see something looks like waves coming back in. They're very, very faint, but it looks like when it blows out, comes back in, you know, it collapses back in.
Yes.
That's what you're looking for. That's what you're seeing. And you're seeing that whole, you know, oxygenation of the explosion being taken place at that millisecond, you know, nanosecond. And that's traveling, you know, and those waves are traveling. They're consuming oxygen at supersonic speed. I mean, it's happening like that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I can't remember. I think it was Cal Humphrey that I interviewed that said, yeah, most of those guys didn't get killed by the flame. They got killed because the oxygen got sucked out of the cave.
Oh, yeah. And it burned their lungs.
Right.
It collapsed their lungs.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. There was no. Yeah, it sucked all the oxygen out of the cave and you just laying there dead. I've got a couple questions for you. Mac, ask Gunner if he believes that a major did what Ken Rogers said. Okay, true or false? You're a Lance Corporal at Kason. You get told, Musselman, you're leaving today. You go up to see the company commander, and he says, well, it's a day early, but you can go up and try. You walk into the air officer, and the air officer looks at you and says, you're not supposed to go out till tomorrow. And you say, yes, sir, I know. And then he looks at you and says, well, you're in Bravo Company. Were you part of the trench clearing on March 30th? And you say, yes, sir. And he stands up and salutes you. Yes or no, did that happen?
Yeah.
Straight up happened.
Yeah, absolutely.
Got his ass on a bird and got him out of there that day. Next email. Mac, you and Ken were talking about favorite movies and favorite scenes out of movies. Talking about Ken as now a filmmaker. Gunner, have a favorite military movie or favorite scenes out of movies?
Yeah, it's Apocalypse Now.
What scene?
Colonel Kilgore.
Colonel Kurtz?
No, Kilgore.
Oh, you mean? You mean this guy? That's your boy?
That's my boy.
How about the here? Hey, the snap of the rotors, though.
We didn't find one of them.
Yeah.
One stinking big body. Smell! Get all that gasoline smell! A whole hill! Smells like victory.
You know what I love most in that audio? I love this, especially towards the end. There's awesome. They've got helicopters going right over the top of them.
Well, they got splattering of bullets. You can hear the bullets transferring from supersonic to transonic speeds over the heads. That's real. You know, that's what's really happening.
Right.
And it's just this, you know, the cleanup operation going on. But you know, and a lot of people were like, "Well, that's not a true movie." No, it's not, dumbass. But you know what? Every male our age, if he doesn't say this, was inspired by that guy at some point. And then when they were in the military, tried to do something that was similar, not as stupid as Colonel Kurtz, you know, like that kind of thing, but kind of in their mind was living this whole thing of, man, this is it. It's a goddamn lie.
No, everybody saw it, right? Everybody watched it.
Yeah.
Ken was talking about being a Vietnam veteran. I said, how much water skiing do you think they actually did? He started laughing. He said, not too much. And then it made me think of you. He said, you know, that boat business was a dangerous business. And in my mind, I'm thinking about your boat trip. And, FBA,
Well,
Fox just announced that the director of the FBI is stepping down.
Wow. I would tell you this, Mark.
Yeah.
Did I think it happened? Yeah, absolutely. If it happened one time, it happened.
Right.
I'm sure there's some crazy kid, because, dude, I'm looking back at the time in Iraq and Afghanistan, and it's like, did we actually do that? Yeah. Okay. You know, if that would have happened, if someone would have got a pair of water skis in Vietnam, I'm damn sure that they would have tried the water ski. You know, it's the same thing. Hell, if someone would have given a Marine a surfboard in Iraq, they would have tried to surf in the Euphrates River.
Or if they could have, you know, they could have done, what do they call that in, let's see. You do it in Minnesota where once the ditches fill up with water, you'll kneeboard in the ditch and you'll get a rope and you'll attach it to the hitch, the bumper of the truck, and then you'll.
Yeah.
It's like white. It's like white trash surfing. Yeah. And you're thinking like, what are you talking about? Like, oh yeah, that. Yeah, no kidding. It's that. And so I don't disagree with you that, are there guys who do crazy stuff? Absolutely there.
In the march up in 2003, right? When we were killing anything that was moving that was Iraqi, right?
Right.
You know what Mr. Dumbass did?
What?
Me? We captured a intact, mint condition, 2003, very low miles, BMP-2. And guess what we decided to do?
You didn't decide to get in it and drive it.
Shit, yeah, we were having fun until all of a sudden we were like, there's a helicopter coming, we better get out of this damn thing. And we ran back to our LAV. Shit, yeah, we did, man. But we didn't even give it a second shot. All we were was like, oh, check this out. And they kept it in, I mean, the main gun was loaded, everything. This thing was loaded. I think I took the sight off of it. I took the night sight, I unscrewed it, not realizing that you need the whole thing, but I just wanted something out of it. But it, yeah, we did stupid stuff.
No, he says, what was interesting when I talked to Ken about that, I said, what was the most impactful scene for you in the movie? And I talked about, you and I probably talked
about
it. Apocalypse Now. And I said, 'cause certainly your lens has changed now that you've seen it, I'm sure, since you've become a filmmaker. He said, yeah. And he said, well, for the most impactful scene for me was the slaughtering of the bull, the water bull at the end of the movie. I said, what? He said, yeah. He said it was this ritualistic slaughter, and I thought that was a metaphor for Vietnam. I was like, whoa, that's pretty fucking deep for a Lance Corporal there, bro. And,
yeah, that's it.
Yeah. I said, for me, it was the, that scene where the black soldier is wounded, and he's screaming, grabbing his thigh as they're getting ready to medevac him. And then as they put him on the bird, the female throws her hat into the helicopter, and it explodes. And then they chase her down. That Kiowa chases her down the trail and machine guns her and kills her. And I remember being, I mean, you didn't see in the Sands of Iwo Jima, when Sergeant Stryker got killed, he just tipped over. He didn't struggle. He didn't scream. None of that, you know. And to see somebody react like that, I'd never seen that. I just remember thinking, is that?
You know what it was for me?
What?
All of it. And that was the beauty of Apocalypse Now, because even though it wasn't the same, we didn't fight that same war. The beauty behind Apocalypse Now and the dilemma that Martin Sheen had in the whole movie was, this utter nonsense of this, you know, here he is trying to do something that he doesn't even know is right or wrong, but he was ordered to do something. And this whole senseless, you know, thing that's going on around them. So, you know, it's the same thing. Like, the thing that used to crack me up were kind of just, what my opportunity was, you know, we would go from Fallujah back up to Bayap to the international airport to the Green Zone. And in 1 minute, you'd be sitting in a room with the finest china in this beautifully, you know, built marble, whatever your thing in this palace, drinking fine coffee or tea, eating Danishes from Jordan, with your, just your boots on and listening to these people talk. And then going down, and the next thing you know, you're standing in line in a Pizza Hut line in, you know, or looking at a bunch of women in, you know, European women in bikinis at a pool drinking drinks in, you know, all in the same day. And then you're back in Fallujah the next night killing people. It was just crazy.
You had a pretty interesting seat, though, because you got around.
Yeah, but it was just, or seeing just like the miles and miles and miles and of just shit and supplies coming in and the money being spent for what? You know, or the hockey bags full of $20 bills that we used to hand out. You know? You know, it was the first time I've ever seen, you know, $1 million in 20s. Was the war.
What's it look like?
And we saw it all the time. It's a lot of money. It's big.
It's big.
Yeah, it doesn't fit in a briefcase. It's got to be like a hockey bag. You know your old hockey gear bag?
Yeah, I used to haul them all over the place, right?
And they used to load those things up like they were nothing. Payments, bribes, you know? And you're looking at going, man. And then, but if you knew what you're looking at, man, that $20 is from some corn farmer in Kansas. That $20 is from some medical student or a dental therapist or dental hygiene assistant in San Jose, California. And, you know, all of this, you're like, do these people know? No, it's crazy. And then, you know, again, we get people, why did that person get wounded? Because they did this. Or why won't that helicopter fly into that area and pick up that wounded guy? Because they're afraid to get shot down. This is a goddamn war. Everywhere we go, we're going to face danger. I mean, just you get all these moments. You know, I think it's the crazy thing for me about that movie and the crazy thing that I've witnessed in war is, we try and make out moments of clarity and not utter confusion.
Right.
That's crazy.
That's the crazy part.
When you're a crazy person if you're trying to pick out moments of clarity in nothing but confusion. You're crazy. You know, and when you look at it in the whole, what we did as individuals, what we did as a unit, there were crazy times, but when you take the zoom lens and you're not going from the micro back out to the macro. Man, it's crazy, dude. The policy that got us there in the first place. Right? The lie that got us there. And then what we did after that. It was utter craziness. And that's why I like that movie, because truth being told, that's what it's like. It's utter chaos. It's crazy. But Martin Sheen was that one person who believed that he was righteous and he was doing what he thought was right. But then it dawned on him at the very end that no matter what or how righteous you thought you were, once you insert one piece of righteousness into chaos or craziness, it becomes crazy too. So that's why I like the movie, because everything about it is crazy. But they're trying to define moments of clarity within that movie. That, the beauty behind it to me.
Do you remember, did you see it when it came out in the theater? And your dad served in Vietnam, right?
Right.
And who was
your, I don't know if you ever saw.
Who was your dad with?
He was with 3-1. Mike with 3-1 at first, and then he was with 3-5.
So you're like a family full of Dark Horse people. What years was he there?
He was there in the bad time. He was there during the
Tet.
Yeah.
Was he with 3-5 during Tet in Hue?
No, 2-5 was in Hue.
Yeah, 1-5, 2-5. You know what? I was talking with one of the platoon commanders over the weekend in my old company, Charlie 1-5. But I was 3rd platoon. He was with 1st platoon. They suck. Anyway, he said we were fighting the Viet Cong, keeping the base at Da Nang safe. We were, over by the coast fighting the Viet Cong, booby traps and counterinsurgency and all that. We had never even studied combat in an urban terrain. There was no combat town. We practiced on Asianvilles and jungle fighting before we went to Vietnam.
So right.
He said literally guys had manuals that somebody brought to Vietnam and flew up, and we were reading stuff. He said that's what was going on as we went to Hue. Like, holy shit.
But you can't ask those guys because in their world, they're trying to do, they're the moment of clarity. They're the righteous. They don't see it in the big level.
Yeah, no. All he knows is his experience, right? All he knows is his experience.
Yeah, yeah.
He loses 27 Marines the first day in Hue.
Your experiences as the SWO for the RCT, you saw on the big level every day. And the moments of insanity where, why are you arguing with another guy in the same uniform on what helicopter goes to pick this guy up? Insanity. Or why are we trying to move a generator across? I mean, insanity.
Yeah,
the Lance Corporal on the ground, he's in that moment of clarity. He's totally righteous.
Because the only thing that matters is his survival and the survival of his friend.
Right. There's nothing more righteous than that. But when you get in the position that we were in, and you have the ability to zoom out, it gets weird. You don't like it. When you start seeing everything working the way it does, and you're like, man, this is not supposed to be. And it was the same way in the Marine Corps. I mean, most of the battles I fought in Washington, in Quantico, were with guys in the same uniform, trying to convince them that, this was the right thing to do. And it came, well, it's about money, Mike, and we don't, wait a second. We just told the families that we'll spare no expense. Now you're telling me there is a number. What is that number? Tell me what the number is. Oh, I don't want to. No, we're not that either. No, you are. Tell me the number. What will be the number we're not going to go above? Give me something to work with. Bob Miller, I mean, he's had to defend his position on, the whole infantry first thing. Why is the infantry more important than everybody else? Why do they need better gear? Insanity. When you have to defend that.
Yeah, that's why you as a leader, right, you can't take counsel of your fears and your detractors. I mean, I think that, you have to chart a course and you have to be comfortable with it. Well, I remember, We didn't really know. We thought up armored Humvees were what we built. We improved the doors and we sandbagged the bottoms. I mean, the Air Force had this thing that they had developed, and the Army had some, but it was primarily developed by the Air Force, an up armored Humvee. And the first time I ever saw it was a picture that came in from Husaba, where a guy walked in the middle of the street and he opened up on a Marine patrol. They were in a Humvee that the 3rd ACR had left behind and given to him. And windshield has pock marks on it from where the 7.62 rounds of the machine gun hit the windshield and didn't go through. And we had never seen anything like it. And then we got a bunch of them. And, right, Fallujah's in the news every day. For whatever reason, it came to current ops come up with a plan to divvy these up. And, most of our deaths were in Ramadi at the time. Some in Husaba and some in Fallujah. But, you know, RCT-1 was screaming like, hey, send those down to us. And I remember sitting with Roger Turner, a guy named John Myrna, and J.J. Carroll. I don't know if you know those guys, but great guys. Mm-hmm. All guys that taught at IOC. And they said, Mac, what do you think? And I said, well, I don't know. I'm not worried about fare, but where are we taking casualties? Where are our KIA? And we started looking at those, and they said, 65% of them are in Ramadi. I said, well, in my opinion, 65% of these ought to go to Ramadi then. And then we'll divvy the rest of them up, and then we'll continue to, we'll flow them in until we get people full up round. But if that's where we're getting killed, then that's where these should go. And, certainly a lot of blowback, because that wasn't, that wasn't what was in the news at the time. What was in the news at the time was Fallujah. But interesting. But I don't know that you just like, so I guess that's my way of answering. Why do the infantry guys get this equipment? Because they're the ones that are out there getting killed. I guess if it was our SIGINT guys that were getting killed, guess what? They'd be in my opinion, they should be first in line. But it's not a question of they're more worthy. They're simply, it's their occupational hazard to go get killed greater than any other MOS. So we owe them. And we will improve everybody else's as we can, and as funds allow, but When you make your living walking down a street most of the time with no drone overhead and it's the quick and the dead, we owe you the best that we can give you. And so it goes.
Right.
But you got to be comfortable with that. And if you're trying to make it fair or you're trying to make it make sense to all people, then that's a losing proposition. I had one other question that I wanted to ask you about movies, but I forgot it. Anyway, what do you got going today? You're back on the political trail? You fired up?
Wednesday, we have the debate with the judges, yeah.
All right. You don't sound fired up about it.
I do.
You fired up? You were fired up the other day.
Yeah, like I said, I just had a turmoilous weekend, and it was just,
All right, well.
That's over.
Well, we hope you feel happier today.
Yeah, I will. Absolutely.
I have Fox News on, and
Said they fired who?
Andrew McCabe just resigned. FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe is from Eric Holder, Barack Obama's Attorney General. Is and has been a dedicated public servant who has served this country well. Bogus attacks on the FBI and DOJ to distract attention from a legitimate criminal inquiry does long-term unnecessary damage to these foundations of our government.
Oh, God, please.
Yeah, Holder needs to go away. if I look, even the most skeptical among us, when they've seen the number of data points relative to the FBI and the Department of Justice, there is no other conclusion other than something's wrong here, boys. We need to take a look. And it's icky, but even the most skeptical person who looks at that, the number of data points, and doesn't conclude that there's something wrong, that's like somebody walking in the room and saying, yeah, Bill Clinton wasn't a good politician. Okay, just leave, right? You can't even call what's truth. So we don't need you here. So anyway, interesting stuff. President's State of the Union tomorrow night. Fired up about that. Be interesting. But anyway, all right, Mike. Well, I hope you feel better.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. I'll give you a call. We'll talk later.
All right. Talk later.
But there you have it, Michael Musselman. Being philosophical today. My thanks to Ken Rogers for coming on. If you're just tuned in or you tuned in late, don't touch that dial, man. Today's program's awesome. And 50th anniversary of Quezon. So, so I figured at some point we should talk to Rogers, who's a favorite. And so we did. And it's a great interview. There's a number of questions about now that he's made the transition from Lance Corporal to filmmaker, different thoughts of his on different war films, ones he likes, ones he doesn't like. Zulu, yeah, the movie with Richard Harrison. So you'll get to hear him. You'll get to hear him talk about the power of his own documentary, Bravo. Common Men, Uncommon Valor. And it all gets laid at the feet of his wife, Betty, who said, hey, you know, we probably ought to record this. So, great stuff. So you'll hear Ken Rogers. And then Gunner, kind of philosophical today, about reality and confusion in war. So, with that said, on a Monday, All Marine Radio. Over and out. Have a great one. We'll see you tomorrow. Jerry Joe's our guest. He's the president of the 1st Marine Division Association. On this coming Friday, it is the 77th anniversary of the founding of the 1st Marine Division. So they will rededicate the battle colors. Pretty cool ceremony. And the 1st Marine Division Association will be down there all week, I think starting tomorrow. And there'll be different festivities and exhibitions and things that they'll do to honor the alumni. And then they'll have a big banquet. So, cool stuff going on. The Blue Diamond, baby. Have a great one. This program repeats itself right about now.